Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hello, law entrepreneurs. This is Neil Tyra with you for episode number 11, and I'm coming to you live from Las Vegas, Nevada, where I am attending the Lawyernomics 2016 conference put on by AVO. Actually, we've completed the conference, and I'm getting ready to pack up and come on home, but I thought I would take a few minutes and share with you some of the things that I've learned here at Lawyernomics. And there's so much, I think we're actually going to spread this over two episodes. We'll see, but probably so. So probably this episode and the next episode, we'll cover lawyer economics, and then we'll get back to our regular programming. Just a couple of side notes here. The podcast is doing really well, thanks to all of you, the very kind reviews that you have left on iTunes have a definite impact. As I sit here before you on Sunday morning, the podcast is ranked number 5 overall in the business category in news and noteworthy. And that's a big deal, because when people log into iTunes, the first thing they see at the top is the news and noteworthy categories of podcasts. And that gives you a lot of visibility and a lot of traction for growing your podcast. So I'm really thrilled about that, and really grateful to all of you. I have to admit, I don't really understand iTunes, their algorithm, because we fluctuate back and forth. We actually got as high as number 1 for one day, and then we dropped all the way down to 27, and now we're back up to 5. So I really don't understand how that works, but I do know that the reviews and the downloads are central part of the algorithm that iTunes uses. And so for that, I am grateful to you for all the work that you've done to share your kind words with iTunes. I also want to give out a shout out to Ben Stevens. Ben is an attorney in Spartanburg, South Carolina. He runs a family law practice, very successful practice down there in Spartanburg. And I first came in contact with Ben and came to know him through a blog that he writes called The Mac Lawyer. And you can find that at www.themaclawyer.com. And it's, a blog about just what it says, lawyers who use Macs and Apple products in their practice. And since that's what I do, I've followed Ben for a long time. Well, I'm sitting here at the conference, and as I'll talk about it in a few minutes, one of the presenters casually made note that you need to review or Google both your name and your law firm name at least once a month, maybe even a little bit more in some cases, to find out where you stand and what's going on and who's talking about you and what's being said. And so while I'm sitting there listening to the presenter, I did just that. And lo and behold, I find that Ben has written a blog post just a couple of days ago that was all about our podcast, and it was a recommendation for his audience to come listen to The Law Entrepreneur, and it was completely unsolicited. I had no idea he even did it, and so Ben, I am enormously grateful for your kind words and look forward to having you on the show at some point here in the near future. So conferences. I enjoy going to conferences. I try and go to one or two a year, sometimes more. I recognize that not everybody can do that, particularly if you're just starting out in your practice. But I think conferences are great. They're wonderful for networking, for meeting new people, and for getting great ideas. I mean, I think it's one of those things where you go, you say, if I walk away with one or two actionable things that improve my practice, that the conference was a success. So this conference is put on by AVO, and I'm pretty sure that most lawyers understand what AVO is. Originally, it was founded in Seattle by an attorney by the name of Mark Britton, and originally it was the place for lawyers to have a profile listed and to obtain a unbiased ranking, 10 being the highest, and so most attorneys try and strive to get that. It's also a place where consumers could get questions answered, legal questions answered, at no cost. And so AVO has built, you know, a great reputation in that space. Now they're doing something pretty interesting and, you know, somewhat controversial in some circles. They spoke about it often here at the conference. They're expanding to provide fixed fee legal services as well as do-it-yourself legal forms to the consumer. And they went to great length to explain the rationale as to why they're doing that and how that can benefit the attorneys that use AVO. So we'll talk about that here, both this episode and more so in the next episode, when we review actually Mark Britton's State of the Union address to the conference. But in any case, as I said, conferences I think are great. If you're just getting started and your budget is tight, I would obviously look at your local conferences, conferences put on by your local bar association or by local industry groups that have a niche that dovetails with your practice. So you... Those are, I think, the most cost-effective ones. You can also go to conferences that are targeted to a specific aspect of your practice. So, for instance, like myself, I go every year, although I didn't go to the last year, but every year except the last year, I went to Milo Fest. Milo is Mack and Law Office, and that's put on by Victor Medina, who was our guest on episode 3. Of the Law Entrepreneur. Milo Fest is down in Disney, down in Florida. And it's just a fun little conference, and I really enjoy that. So it's not for everybody. But a lot of people also go to the ABA Tech Show in Chicago, and that's another conference for people who want to look at using technology to improve their law firm. You can also go to conferences that focus on your practice area. One that comes to mind is the Heckerling Institute for Estate Planning, which is held every year. I think it's in Florida, but that's a conference solely devoted to estate planning and targets that market. But I went here to Lawyernomics. So this is the first time I've been to the Lawyernomics conference put on by AVO. It's the 7th or 8th year, I forget what they said, of their conference. 600 people attended, and it was really a very, very good conference. I would highly recommend it to anybody, and in particular because the price is right. The cost was just a little over $600, and I think it's cheaper the earlier you register, but it was just a little over $600. In contrast, I was looking at another conference in a couple of weeks. I'm not going to it, but I was looking at it and thought about going to it. It was in San Diego, which was $1,600 for roughly the same amount of time. So from a cost standpoint, a value standpoint, I thought the AVO conference was really of great value. And it's at the Wynn, so the Wynn Casino and Hotel here in Las Vegas, so you really can't go wrong there. They had a good price for attendees, so again, I would highly recommend that you look into going to the conference. So let's talk a little bit about what happened there. So we started on Friday morning with the substantive parts of the conference on the 8th of April. And the keynote speaker was Scott Stratton, S-T-R-A-T-T-E-N. Scott has a podcast of his own called the Unmarketing Podcast. You can look at his podcast or listen to his podcast at www.unmarketing.com or just search for it on iTunes. And Scott's a marketer, and he was hysterical. He was so funny. And that's what you really need as an initial keynote speaker, to kind of get everybody engaged and everybody focused on the conference. So Scott had a lot of stories to share. One of those was in terms of customer service and how the best companies and firms relate to their customers. And he told a story having to do with an incident that occurred at Ritz-Carlton, where a young family member left a stuffed toy, Joshy, behind. And you can go online, search for the Joshy story, the Ritz-Carlton Joshy story, and you'll see the whole thing. But it was great. It really kind of focused the audience. Scott noted that branding is what people think of when they see your name or logo. And it was a segue into this Joshy story, and he showed the logo of the Ritz-Carlton and asked the audience, what do you think when you think of Ritz-Carlton? And if, looking at this logo, and people had the predictable answers for that question. And then he showed this story about Joshy and the stuffed animal and what have you. And then it had you look at the logo and indicate what you think about the Ritz-Carlton. So he was showing the power of how customer relations can influence one's brand. And I thought that was really profound. He also said to get word-of-mouth advertising, and he was talking about word-of-mouth advertising being the best you can get. To get word-of-mouth advertising, you actually need to do something worth talking about. And I thought that resonated with the audience in the sense that you can't just hope to have somebody talk about your firm. You have to give them reasons to talk about your firm. And the last point I wanted to illustrate, I had to actually tweet this out during the conference because I thought this was profound. He said, to be great, you only have to be mediocre because most people suck. And his point there is in order to resonate with your audience, you don't have to really do a lot because most people aren't paying attention to their audience or to their client base. A mentor of mine, Mark Miranda at Smart Marketing, I think I mention him every podcast we do, he used to always say that if you wanted to stand out amongst your peers as an attorney, start answering the phone and returning phone calls, because a lot of attorneys aren't doing that. And I thought about that when I heard Scott say, to be great, you only have to be mediocre because most people suck. Anyways, a great keynote, and we moved on from there. The next guy up was Mike Ramsey, from a company called Nifty Law, N-I-F-T-Y, Law. And you can find them at www.niftylaw.com. They're basically a marketing group for attorneys. They do a lot with the technical aspects of online marketing. And Mike had some really interesting observations and data. That's one of the things I thought really stood out amongst this conference. A lot of the presenters provided excellent statistical support for the points that they were making. But Mike was pointing out that there's changes at Google, and that Google is now using artificial intelligence to evaluate search terms to return the search results. So in the past, it's been, you know, the Google algorithm, the secret sauce they use to, when you plug your search terms in to return the results, and gaming that system, understanding what that is, was what most people did to try and improve their Google search results. But now Google's using artificial intelligence, and I think he called it Rank Brain was the kernel of the AI component. And so that the algorithm is self-modifying based on results. So I thought that was kind of cool as a geek thing. He also indicated that Google is changing the way the results are being presented. You know, the traditional view that the paid ad results were at the top and down the right-hand side, and the organic results, for those of you who follow that, are in the middle on the left, that's changing. It's becoming more of a single column. And that's predicated on the explosion of mobile devices as being the primary source for people searching the internet. And that was a theme also that ran throughout the conference, that the legal consumer is in large numbers accessing the internet almost exclusively through their mobile devices, and you need to respond to that. And he also pointed out that organic results are still winning. People get more more contacts, more leads from appearing high up in the organic results than they are from appearing in the paid locations on the Google search page. And I suspect my own observation on that anecdotally is that I think people who are using Google to search the internet, they know that the top part and the part on the right-hand side is paid advertising. And if you're like me, I kind of tune that out. I don't even look at the paid advertisers because I know that they're there because, you know, they were able to fork over the money. So, you know, they showed a heat map of focus group that showed where on the Google page their attention was drawn first and where it stayed the longest, and it was on the organic results. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So Mike went on to list five key points that people need to do. One was you need to up your mobile game, and you need to make sure that your website is capable of being displayed on mobile devices, on your iPhones, on iPads, and Android devices. And if you're unsure about that, go on your phone and in your web browser on your phone, type site, S-I-T-E, colon, and then put your domain name. So in my case, it was site, colon, www.tyralawfirm.com. And you'll get a result back. And what you want to look for is the words mobile friendly. If you see mobile friendly in the results, then you know that your website is just that, is mobile friendly. If your website is not mobile friendly, you have to talk to someone or do it yourself, but you need to redesign your website to be mobile friendly, because overwhelmingly people are searching the web on their phones. And so if you can't display your website on somebody's phone, you're wasting your time. He also made a point of recommending a WordPress plugin. Again, if your law firm website is built on a WordPress platform, take a look at PageFrog WordPress plugin in order to make your website mobile friendly. He went on, his second point was you need to fix your listings. So do a search on your My Business listing, Google's business listings, and correct any misinformation, because if you have bad information there, obviously you know, it's not going to reflect well on you. And I noticed that on a couple of listings, when I searched for my own name, that it still had my old street address for my office. So I had to go in and change those. I didn't realize that they didn't get changed automatically when I changed my Google listing. So anyway, look at a bunch of the different listings. And if you want to get a list of local listings, you can search just on that. Search for local listings, local website listings, and then log into those platforms. If you're not already there, you can create a free profile. And it takes a little time, and you want to make sure you keep it up to date, but that's important. His third point was to make client reviews a significant part of the client experience, to build the process of asking for a review from your clients in every case that you serve. So he gave a bunch of statistical information. It was overwhelming about how important client reviews are. And so suggested that you go to the various platforms on which clients can leave a review, whether that be Avvo or on Google or on your own website or on Facebook. And you go to that review page, copy the URL, and you send it in an email to your client at the end of the case and ask them for a review. And the easier you can make that for your client, the more likely they are to leave a review. And so that's critically important. And of all the places for reviews to be noted, it was Mike's opinion that the best return or the most effective place that your client could leave a review was on your Facebook professional page. So that begs the question, if you're on Facebook, you should have both your personal page and your professional page. So for instance, I'm on Facebook, you know, individually as Neil Tyra, but I have a professional page for the law firm, the Tyra Law Firm. And it's on that page that you can direct your satisfied clients to go and leave a review. And that is, in his opinion, the most effective place. That, and of course, on Avvo, because people are going to Avvo, potential clients are going to Avvo to research you as an attorney, and that's another key factor in their evaluation. Fourth, he said to make sure your website is in order. So if you haven't updated your website or it's old and shows incorrect information or just looks like you don't pay attention to it, well, you're defeating your own cause, because that's really how the new legal consumer is making choices about attorneys based on your website. So you need to get your website in order. And to that end, the fifth point is you need to make sure that there are local links into your website. So places other than your website that refer to your website create a link. And the more links you can get from outside sources pointing towards your website, the better you'll do in the organic search and the higher up you'll appear. So I thought that was all great information from Mike Ramsey of Nifty Law, and just a very engaging speaker. Next, we had Jabez Labrette. Jabez is a fellow who works with a company called GNGF. It's just the initials, GNGF. And they too are a content marketing specialist for law firms, principally content marketing, but they do provide a lot of other service for law firms to improve their online presence. And Jabez gave four strategies for improving the content of what you have on your law firm website or on your blog. And the first one that he mentioned was that you had to write the content for your blog posts and for the different pages on your webpage. Write the content for public relation purposes. Now, it made the clarification that this, you're not writing a press release, but when you write a blog post, for instance, you want to write it with the idea that that blog post is going should be attractive to an outside journalist, for instance, who then might pick up that information and use that as a source for their own articles. And journalists are always looking for information and story ideas. So that your blog becomes a really important vehicle for establishing yourself as an expert in the field. And so he suggested that you research a topic that, that you feel has resonance and would be of value to both your potential clients as well as the public in general, that you blog about it on your website, and then you send a link to that blog post to local journalists to start with, and if you have a big enough profile, then more nationally oriented journalists, and that this is a great way to create a buzz about your law firm and increase the number of links to your website and therefore, you know, elevate your search results. Another idea for content marketing was to create lists. Now, this is not new. If you do any type of search, you're going to find the three best ideas for Facebook advertising, or the 17 most popular fictional TV lawyers. That was one of the blog entries that they wrote, the top 17 most popular fictional TV lawyers. And that you should create one of these killer lists, one of these really attractive lists that people like to go through, that you should do that at least once a quarter. I thought that was a good metric. So create a killer list, top whatever, in your practice area, or just kind of a fun topic that has an interest to your readers and to potential clients, and do that once a quarter. Third, he also suggested that you might want to think about doing a public service announcement contest. This had some mixed results from the audience, but basically what they did for a client was do a public service contest where they were offering some type of prize, and they were being the sponsor for that public service announcement contest. And because it was for, as we say, it's a public service, it had better traction, was picked up by other outlets, and gave greater visibility to the law firm as the sponsor of that contest. So that seemed a little more difficult to do, but I thought it was kind of an interesting idea. And his last point was to create a larger form product, something that that involved a lot of perhaps research to do a big survey and collaborate with other people to create that survey and generate a report and make that report available on your website. And he showed examples of law firms that did an annual report on, say, the state of bankruptcy law, or an annual report on consumer protection. And those were very popular, and they had a lot of information. Admittedly, they're a lot of work, and they're time-consuming to generate. I think as a solo, that would be probably tough to do, but it's worth thinking about as you move forward. So then we took a break for lunch, and we'll wrap this up here pretty quickly now, because I didn't go to all the last couple of offerings in the afternoon, but I did attend Ann Hanley's afternoon keynote presentation. Ann is an author who wrote a book, very popular book called Everybody Writes. And again, she was focusing in on content, how to generate good content for your website or for your blog. And Anne had three main suggestions here about improving your content: to make it bigger, to make it bolder, and to have a braver voice. And by bigger, she was suggesting that the things that you write about need to start initially with what your story is, that your story is the start. And the more expansive you can make that, the more revealing that you can make that, the more you can connect with potential clients. So I know that there's a hesitancy amongst a lot of attorneys if they're writing for their their own blog or on their website, to revealing, you know, too much of their own personal story. But, you know, she was there to suggest that that hesitancy is not well founded, because the more personable you can make yourself to your audience, the greater the affinity that they create with you, and the more likely they are to engage you. So she's said, in order to make this your writing bigger, she should address four different questions. Okay? Who do you want to reach? So have a better understanding of who your potential client is, and focus your writing on that client. And number two, what value do you want to deliver to the client? To focus on the values that you deliver as opposed to the accomplishments that you've had. And three, define why that is important. You know, what's the downside of not paying attention to what you're writing about, or what's the importance of paying attention to what you're writing about? And then lastly, be real clear about what do you want them to do next. Have a clear call to action in your writing for your blog posts. So that was about making your podcast, blog posts bigger. Bolder, she suggests that you take more risks and not be afraid to be a little bit edgy in your writing, because if it's pure vanilla, people get bored by it and they're not going to be engaged by it. So have a bolder statement in what you write about. And lastly, have a braver voice, to not be afraid to take a controversial stand or to explain who you are or why you do what you do, and what you're like to deal with. So to not be shy about your own involvement with your law firm and what you have to offer. So I thought that was interesting in terms of expanding your content. And then lastly, we heard from Lee McMillan. Lee is a member of AVO. She works for AVO. And she pointed out that only 25% of the law firms have a content strategy, who actually have thought about what they're going to do in terms of their blog posting or their web page development. Then only, one out of four have a strategy to start with. So her suggestion was that your content strategy has to answer five questions. And some of these are similar to what we heard before. So first off, the question was, what is your objective? What are you trying to do with your content marketing? Number two, what is your niche? Can you accurately describe what type of law you're offering and what services you're offering to potential clients? And thirdly, what is your brand voice? How are you perceived by your readers and by those who are reviewing the website. Do you have a consistent voice? Are you clear about who you are? And she suggests picking three words to describe your practice. So kind of like a Mad Libs almost, kind of fill in the blank. Pick those three words. Define what those three words are, or three phrases, if you will, and then use that consistently throughout your writing so that you have that consistent brand. And then fourth question, what content makes sense? You know, what does it make sense for you to write about? It has to be something that you like to do or that you like to write about. Some of this sounds like it's drudgery if it's not something that interests you. So she too suggests that you do lists, that you do checklists, that you do FAQs, frequently asked questions, or that you have surveys. All of these are geared towards finding out what your potential clients are looking for, and also providing value to them in the form of lists and checklists, FAQs and surveys and the like. And lastly, how can you amplify that content? What do you do with the content that you have written? How do you get more leverage from it? How do you get a wider audience? And she suggests that email is still the most effective distribution model beyond just publishing it in your blog or on your website, so that you continue to send links or the articles themselves, the checklists, the lists, the surveys, the FAQs, to an email list. And so that begs that you take time to develop and manage a robust email list. And then lastly, I listened to Jamie Adams. Jamie Adams is a fellow who works for Scorpion, who was the platinum sponsor for the conference. Jamie had focused on strategies for LinkedIn and Facebook. And I thought it made some perfect sense and had a lot of concrete things to say. I think by and large, most of them, however, are stuff that most people who, if they have a LinkedIn profile or have a Facebook page, that you kind of already know a little bit. So I didn't get a whole lot of new stuff out of what Jamie had to say, although it was very engaging and I enjoyed the presentation. One of the things he said, we'll keep an eye on this and look at this in the future, he felt that Snapchat is going to be the biggest thing in social media in the next 2 years. And I've heard that from a couple of other people. So Snapchat is an application available on your phone that's taking off. It allows you to do, I think, real-time video. But it beyond that, I'm not really sure that I understand what Snapchat is. So I'm going to take a look at that and try and understand that a little more going forward. One of the other key points I thought was kind of interesting was on your Facebook page, you suggested that on the professional page, on your business page, that you make sure you check out the Insights tab to learn more about your audience. And so while I was sitting there listening to him, I did just that. I hadn't looked at that. And so it was really eye-opening, because the Insights tab gives you information on who your audience is, who's viewing your posts, what they're clicking on, the demographics of who they are. And it's a wealth of information. And now you have an idea of who to write for. And so I thought that was valuable. And that was a long day. So that was Saturday. And I got a lot of value out of it. I met some great people. I schmoozed with all the vendors, several of whom I already use. So Ruby receptionists that I use, they were there. I talked with them for quite a long while. And LawPay, another vendor that I use for processing credit cards, they were there. They were very interesting to talk to. ScanSnap, they make scanners, and I have their top-of-the-line scanner, which I absolutely love, the iX500. So talked to them. So made a lot of good friends there with the vendors and also with a lot of attorneys from all over the country who were very engaging and a lot of fun to be with. So that was the first day. We then did some fun stuff, my wife and I, going out to dinner and later seeing Mike Tyson's one-man show. And it was her idea, so how about that? But it was great, and I really enjoyed it. Not everybody's cup of tea, I get that. You know, a lot of people still have hard feelings about Mike, but I had a great time. So that was the first day. We'll talk about the second day at the AVO Lawyernomics the next time we meet. And so I thank you for listening to me blab here today and look forward to talking to you again next week. Take care. Well, there you have it, fellow law entrepreneurs. Thank you for listening and being a part of today's program. The utmost compliment you could pay me is to go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, and leave a strong 5-star review if you think the podcast and what we're trying to do here is worthwhile. Feel free to share the link to the podcast with your friends, family, and coworkers. I would be very appreciative if you did. So until next time, thanks again for listening to The Law Entrepreneur.